Yes, thank you, Ulrika, and I'd like to thank the organizers for inviting me to this exciting event, and we've all seen approaches to rethinking revolution from so many angles, and so I will bring another one that will have some, I'm happy to say, some connections with the previous papers also. So the title, Democratic Revolution, Its Presence and Future. And what I will do, I will start by giving you the conclusions of my talk, so you don't have to sit and guess about those. And then I will use the next 20 or so minutes to explain the route of how I get these, reach these conclusions. So then, in very broad strokes, the conclusions, the following. Insofar as we, with a revolution, means a switch of power from one center to another, one of the classical versions of revolution, especially in the political sense, of course. Then my claim is the following. When you talk about a democratic revolution, diverts or is slightly different from this classical ideal in this sense, or this classical meaning in the sense, due to its inherent, or you could say ontological, impossibility to establish itself in the form of some singular concretized power center. It's established itself in some sort of final sense, final being established. Or as an example, then, the embodiment of the power of the people as such. The following, then I will use thinking that, concept that, and the conception that comes from Claude Lefort, the French philosopher. French philosopher, I don't know if you're familiar with his thought. He's been widely influential in contemporary discussion, although usually just mentioned as one of the sources of, especially, called the radical democratic type of contemporary political philosophy. And Lefort is also at the background, stands two thinkers as important for Lefort, Maurice Merleau-Ponty. So Lefort is a kind of phenomenologist, and also Hannah Arendt, who influenced him in a very, very much in a positive sense. So, from Lefort we get the following, roughly, the following claim. We need to talk about the democratic political form. The existence of it depends on what he calls the staging of the continuity of an open tension. And the most easy way to explain this or talk about this open tension, or what he also calls the symbolic, and here we come to the same, in fact, similar concept as the one Cinzia used, and I think that Balibar is partly using it, or using Lefort at that background. So the most simple form of explaining or talking about this symbolic is then this open tension between universal ideals and particular limited instantiations. So this is Lefort's claim, and this is stands at the background of my reflections also. Then the following level, of course, when we talk about democracy as a political, a political form, it's also dependent, as all political forms, on its possibility to establish itself, establish continuity, permanence, etc. You could say to construct its own being and provide this being with some concrete form. You can also use the word, or maybe talk of ontologizing itself. So where do we get from here, or what do I get from here? Yes, adding to this, of course, then related to the previous idea from Lefort, that now no such singular form may finally embody democracy. This is sort of the background here. So from this I would draw the following rough conclusion about democracy as a political ideal. It means something like constituting or ontologizing an open multiplicity of such forms, democratic forms. And all of these forms naturally have to be in tune with democratic ideals, continuously checked by these and checking each other. I have to keep check on time because I only have 20 minutes also. So this is roughly the conclusion. Now, first on the democratic revolution, and I put all of these at the same time, so we don't have to wait. To begin with, two senses of revolution. When we talk about the democratic revolution, I think this is especially important. First, in the sense of a political project with aims, goals set for itself. And the second meaning of revolution is something that you say is a change in society, in power, but this is established, so to speak, after the fact. Something that actually took place, although it necessarily wasn't part of an aim or a political project. And when we talk about the democratic revolution, especially in the Western world, we talk about the American and the French revolutions. So I think I can say that the notion of democracy was not as such in the major role of those revolutions. Revolutions then had other aims. But anyway, for example, de Tocqueville, when he writes about the American Revolution in 1830s, then he begins to talk about the democratic revolution as something that actually, in fact, took place in these revolutions, especially then his interest in the American Revolution. And I think this is, when we talk about democratic revolutions, it's very seldom that you find a revolution that is put exactly in terms of democracy. It's usually other things. You need to get rid of something, and that's why you need a revolution. It's not just to get democracy. But democracy or democratization may be a central part of that also, and gradually become the perhaps even the major thing of what actually happened. Okay, that's about revolution. So when we talk about the democratic revolution, there's certain problems and aporias involved in this, as I see. Because I think we must say that democracy is something like a very unspecified, and by definition unspecified, universalist idea. It contains some certain ideals. I will have a list of them shortly, so we can see what I mean by that. So it's not only an ideal, it's in fact a set of such ideals, and many things at the same time that we want when we talk about democracy, that defines democracy. And this means that there will be ambiguities and tensions. Since they are unspecified universal ideal, they will of course be exactly lies in the nature of having a universal, of talking about universalist ideals, that they contain some ambiguities and tensions themselves. And then if you have a set, you will have ambiguities and tensions between all of these. So the example then, the establishment of the power of the people. So this seems to imply, when you think about this as a unification of pluralist people into a unified subject of some kind, a democratic subject of the people. But on the other hand, democracy as a universalist idea implies something that is sort of by definition all-inclusive. So the notion of the people at the background is all-inclusive, which on the other hand means that pluralism must remain. You can't sort of restrict the people to only some of the people if you have democracy. So that's one of the examples of these problems and tensions of aporias. So when we talk about then these ideals, I put them here, so in a very easy form. So it's normative ideals like this, or a set of ideals like this. I think this list as such is a list that most theoreticians of democracy, philosophers of democracy, would in some manner accept as basic. There's of course all the time discussion about does all of these are all of these involved in the idea of democracy. And I put also within the brackets you have the general, the universal, and you have in the brackets you have a concretization of this. That perhaps makes you think, how can you make these together? You have freedom and then you have a regime of freedom. So how? Just a moment, how does it go? And so on. Right, let me move on then to what Lefort means by the symbolic nature of democratic ideals and how we move from these. So he claims then that the symbolic is something that is central to the democratic form. Now, Lefort has a theory political philosophy where he bases his, where he talks about political forms. And the political form, well, it's his version of talking about the old classical ideas of aristocracy, democracy, and these other things. But then he systematizes this idea of a democratic or political form in a very specific way. Now his claim is that the symbolic is, or the democracy, democratic form is different from these others in exactly in the sense that the symbolic level is essential to it. It's not essential to all political forms. So, and with symbolic, he means what I already almost said, that these ideals are, in their essence, unrealizable in the sense of achieving a final form. So however you think about equality, you will never get that final form out of it. It will always remain open. You can invent forms of having equality, but there will always be a possibility of having a different sort of invention of equality and interpreting equality in a different way. So they are unrealizable. But anyway, they are actively present, and it's the essence of the democratic form that they must be actively present, these universals, in the staging. So as Lefort himself puts it, one of the example, power of the people, well, in that means that the central locus of power will always be empty, or the seat of power is empty in a democracy. You never have the people in power. You will always have a representative, and the representative is never the people. So you always have a tension, open tension between these levels. Now, symbolic, what is this? Well, certainly you can see it as a weakness. You can talk about symbolic, it's merely symbolic. You have these universals, they are nowhere, they are unrealizable, so this is really a weakness. We want this, but we can't get it. That's a weakness. So of course, in the history of political philosophy, you find different solutions to this issue. You have compromises of kind. Well, we can't have the full ideal, so let's invent something that works. Let's compromise and invent something that works. Liberal democracy would be an example of that. You have other contemporary theoreticians that instead want to radicalize. They accept sort of this unrealizability, but then they focus on some area that they view them as a central possibility in contemporary use of democracy, and they attempt then to sort of radicalize those our thinking about those options. So, for example, the idea of the construction of the democratic subject or democratic subjectivity in the form of social movements and so on, that would temporarily take up what democracy actually is, in contrast then with governmental power, which can never embody the power of the people. And yes, let me move on. There's some example there of different theories that fit into that idea, I think. Now, a point for Lefort is that the symbolic is not only a weakness, it's also a strength. And he's not very specific, in fact, on these issues. But one of the strengths of the symbolic is, this is really simplifying things very much. If you have a symbolic or a universal, you only, in fact, need to sort of understand it or grasp it for it to sort of have a kind of existence, because they are very easy things. You say freedom, and as soon people understand freedom or freedom for all, very simple sort of slogan-like things. So you grasp them, and then they sort of are in existence in your world of thinking. You can't get rid of that anymore. If you think freedom for all, it won't go anywhere. So that's one of the strengths of the symbolic, that they have this power. And the other strength is, of course, something that was mentioned already before, that these are usually universals that are already functioning at the very background of the kind of society you are. So also in capitalism and liberal democracy, you always have to fall back on equality and freedom and these kind of universal things. And that gives them also a sort of cultural existence. I put the full this. Let's see. Let's see, like that. Now, what do we mean by symbolic here? And this is what my version of how quite many, in fact, in the contemporary political philosophers use this notion. So it has, in fact, what we mean by symbolic is something that has a double level. With symbolic, we mean exactly what I said before. It's something universalist and unlimited. That's what makes it symbolic and not real. It is a demand that is sort of universalist. And you have a list of possibilities there. But you also have this other possibility on the other side of the symbolic. Symbolic is also, you can't have the universal, but you can have a concrete instantiation, perhaps at a certain time and place here and now. Let's have equality here and now. Let's have this group of people have advancing democratic demands and then standing in for democracy at this very moment because nobody else is doing it. The world goes on like this. And this is also, symbolic, because a group like this, a constitutional right, for example, expression of a constitutional right, can never as such embody the universal, but it stands in anyway on a symbolic level. So it has always the symbolic has a double dimension. It's both a concretization or instantiation and this universe. Okay, so this is partly repeating what I said, but I put it here anyway. So, this is really my conclusion again. But what is central, I think, to Lefort's claim is exactly this, that symbolic dimension is unavoidable. It's not something that we can ever remove by any particular instantiation of democracy, but it will always remain an open set with open universes. And that means, according to Lefort, also that it can't be, it's inherently impossible to finally then instantiate the power of the people, etc. Which means the democracy becomes sort of highly dependent on culture, on people recognizing the kinds of universals, of having them as part of their life, and so on and so on. But of course, it means other things also in reality than just this sort of culture part. People believe in equality, or freedom, and so on. We, of course, have societies where these kind of universals have been made into constitutional values. So you have, of course, also constitutional rights and values and these kind of things written down and, in that sense, institutionalized. So you had it's many, many, many dimensions anyway. Now, according to Lefort, democracy then is as he defines it in one of his versions, one of the versions. It's an open debate over its own legitimacy, or open debate over what the power of the people is to be. And there he very strongly emphasizes the connection between the creation of human rights as a central issue of value, universal in society, in combination with the creation of a public sphere, as that sphere where these issues are discussed and communicated between people. So, I'll skip that last one. So, now coming then to the democratic revolutions, its presence and future, as the titles say. So what's the, with the presence there, I mean exactly the ontological question. How can we have it? what? How can it be here? That's the reason why put that phrase. So if we follow this thread of thought, which I think is at least largely correct, then democracy then depends on this staging of the continuity of this open tension. And yes, as a political form, it needs to be something more. It needs to construct itself, to construct its mode of being or modes of being. So simultaneously, Okay, what is meant by an open tension? Well, here we come the temporal aspect, and now it fits into the general theme. It, of course, the consequence of this, that of having an open tension, is that you are having a process all the time. A process where you can invent certain forms, more concrete forms that instantiate democracy. You can have constitutional rights, you can have an open public spheres, you can have this very different kind of things that instantiate and make possible democracy. But then, of course, you cannot reduce democracy to these institutions, but you must also have the second part, you must have the use of them and the kind of actions that they make possible, and actions also that are allowed to transform and change these institutions and create perhaps new institutions. So here comes the temporal aspect aspect in that. So when we say about democracy that it has to stage this continuity, and sort of ontologize itself, it must be in the form of a being that multiplies action, not a form of a being that sort of stops action, perhaps here in the Arendtian sense of making new things. So of course, if you have, when we think about ordinary form of constitutional democracy, there you have a being, a constitution, but it doesn't multiply action, it tells what is possible and what to do. We should have these elections, so we do this and this. So that's, of course, also action. But it's sort of predefined, the content of this, the form of these actions. But to have a democracy in this sense would mean to create some form of staging that multiplies action, multiplies the possibilities of democratic participation and democratic actions and so on. So then about revolution or democratic revolution, well, we see from this also coming out that yes, we can say that the democratic revolution has happened and is happening. But when we say that, we must also see that, of course, it's nothing that it can't be finished in the similar sense as other forms of revolution, where there's a more concrete switch of power, because what is demanded to have a democracy is that you can't establish that locus of power, center of power, in any clear and final sense. It must remain open. So as a revolution, then it can't be finished. Is that a revolution then? You can ask, of course. Okay, there's other options then. Is it an ongoing revolution, permanent revolution, and so on? These are classical concepts. I don't think they really fit into this. I'm not going to go into the details. We can discuss that, what phrases to use in relation to this. A revolution into the openness of the democratic form, that's all. That sounds silly, but it's really what you must say, in a way, that it means. It's not an ongoing revolution because it's not about a fight against the power, the old power that still exists. It's not permanent revolution in the sense that you would have to continue to struggle against that old power, but it's into an openness. And also what we read from Lefort in his analysis of the democracy then also becomes a political form that has its own inherent threats. So it's not so much about fighting against old power as keeping oneself aware of the possible threats that are inherent to democracy. And Lefort then, you especially interested in totalitarianism, which he claims, I think along the lines of Hannah Arendt also, that totalitarianism is one of those options, a form, political form that comes in and sort of fills the gap of the empty seat. While being totalitarian in the sense that it takes over the whole society. It's not only tyranny, but it's totalitarian in the sense that it's in the same way as democracy covers all, totalitarianism is something that wants to cover all, but it wants to fill it with a more specific form. And the liberal compromise is another version of this, completely different, of course, in its value, but anyway, it's another of these forms when you can't have democracy, then you fill it up with something that is good enough. You have liberal institutions and so on that does the work. But you won't have, that would delimit democracy. Okay. So open multi. Well, my solution to this. How? What is this? The sort of where can we get from there? Well, I don't think that in the contemporary debate, when you find these two one-sided sort of solutions, when you, for example, I have Ernesto Laclau says that the construction of the people as the subjectivity, democratic subjectivity, that's the essence of democracy. So searching for that construction of the people that raises the democratic demands. That's a good idea, that's brilliant. But I think that's too one-sided. So my idea is philosophically more boring because I want many, many good things. Because I think there's things that we also should learn from history about what kind of things have done good things also in a democracy. So the idea of constitutional rights and constitutions is still a good thing. And so on. So that's, this just examples of what this multiplicity means, but in the end it means that sort of creating in the openness in the sense that you make possible different form of democracy, you will have guard constitutional rights that guards equality on one level. You need also democratic forms of action that see to is that when things are not as good, you can sort of do something about it immediately. I think you also need to connect, of course, democracy to other areas of society. So, well, we talked about capitalism today, and of course the global market economy, global capitalism is something that is having a huge effect on our possibilities to act, on equality and everything. So to add to this picture, you, for example, we would need some global kind of legislation that would put limits to capitalism. I think it's obvious that is something that is needed. And then you can add on to this list. But of course, the point is when you have an open multiplicity, you must, as I said in the conclusions in the beginning, that of course they must be aware of how they are in tune with democracy, and also to see to it that the relations between these different you can create them in the form of checks and balances that strengthens democracy and is not going the other way. So, thank you.